Expo Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I'm hearing voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine others, and I'm reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Okay, everybody in the Afterrot land, welcome to the show again. Tonight we have Jessica McHugh on the show. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really super jazzed to be here.
Did you bring cookies?
I did not bring cookies. I brought some beer.
Beer, okay.
A little bit of beer. Also more water than beer, because I had more beer than water earlier tonight.
Okay. That works fine. I have no problems with that. I'll just keep a tally on how many times you say a certain word. I'm going to try and come up with one that might be difficult.
No.
What word do I like? I can't use it in conversation most times. Obsequious. That was one I was using yesterday.
I'm really excited to be on the show.
Cool. Well, that's awesome. So, you are a writer of quite a few books from what I could read. And they seem to be quite a variety of concepts and structures and stories and stuff. And playwrights and all sorts of stuff there. Throw out at me a little bit, what is it you like to write about?
I mean, honestly, if I come down to the nuts and bolts of it, I love writing horror. Horror is always what I come back to. For some reason, if I start writing a story where I don't have a plot in mind, and if I just start writing, it always turns to horror. So I definitely write more of that, but I just like writing everything. Anything that pops into my head, I want to write it, whether genre, medium, anything. Like, I don't know. I'm awful. I don't like to play in my own playground. I like to jump into other people's worlds and stuff like that. And I just can't stay in my own space.
Well, I'm looking through the list of books here, and it's like, well, that, okay, that. Yeah. And then that. And it's like, okay, that. Okay, that. And I don't know how you can make potatoes scary.
Oh my gosh. That's actually one of my favorite short stories. It's actually, like, there's a thing, and it's not something I actually notice that I do when I write, but from reading reviews and people that have read a lot of my work, I obviously focus on a lot of family issues and family drama.
Okay.
Yeah, like, I mean, I know I do it, but I didn't know it was, like, that's a McHugh thing. But apparently it is. And now looking back in retrospect, yeah, that potato story is called Domestic Hate. And it's, yeah, it's all about, like, a potato bug who doesn't want to have a family. And it's really strange and wonderful. And I created a whole, like, potato bug world filled with, like, contraptions and police systems. And it was a lot of fun. But yeah, it was tense and disturbing also.
Well, then that actually is a good lead into a question I like to work on. World building.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do? Did you, like, spend down, it's like, okay, right, and then, hey, okay, I'm going to add this to that and that. Or did you actually plan out and figure out and saying, holy crap, I'm going to have, like, the circumference of the planet like this, and it's going to spin a 36-day turnaround time, and all that crap.
I wish I thought that deeply about it. I mean, for each story, it's different. For that one, I think I just started writing and then realized that it was going to be intricate and had to stop and be like, okay, what the fuck am I talking about? You know, and I mean, that's pretty common in short stories. Short stories, I tend to, as people call it, pants it.
That's one of my questions.
I know, I hate it. I hate that. I just, you know, short stories, I just start writing a lot of the time. Unless it's for a certain anthology I've been invited to with a theme, then I tend to plot. But with novels, I tend to spend a lot of time building that world, yeah, because it's, usually when I write novels these days, I write them in a month or so, because I do them in NaNoWriMo. And so you kind of need to be super prepared with all the world shit, all the character sketches, and yeah, so I don't jump into novels willy-nilly.
Okay, well, in that vein, I know a number of people who do the building process in different ways. I know somebody who has a bunch of little postcards or whatever, they write all the information out there, it's like,
oh, sure.
What if somebody picks it all up and throws it in the air and is like, ah, they just gave me that look.
Yep.
I know somebody who, like, just basically does a whole visual graph thing, and it's like, all right, that's cool. I personally use Scrivener and a bunch of other just notes and things to connect things together. Well, how about yourself?
I tend to do stuff on, just in a notebook. I mean, I have whiteboards all around my writing. I'm sorry if there's a lot of noise. My cat is going crazy with the cheese whiz right now.
Let me say something to the cat. Let me just say something to the cat.
Tracy, are you listening?
Woof!
She's not happy.
She oh, okay.
She's not happy about that. Uh-oh. Which I approve of.
Hey, well, there you go.
I have whiteboards all around my writing hut where I keep information about characters and plot points and outlines and stuff. Also deadlines. But when it comes to plotting out a novel or a story, I feel like I'm sketching it. I put pen to paper, and when I'm kind of just, it's almost like free writing in a way. It feels like I'm illustrating it in words. I just let myself go, and I just plan it out. Whatever comes to my mind, whatever pops into my brain, I just write it. And then I look at it, and I'm like, what are the things I can take from this, and, you know, how can I build a story out of this? So I wish I had a more professional answer like Scrivener or anything like that, more than just, I'm a child with a crayon.
Okay.
I like story writing. Well, you know, but that's basically what I've always been, a child with a crayon. And, you know, the stories, it seems innate to me. Yeah, I know that sounds, you know, ridiculous, but when I set pen to paper and I'm like, Inspirato, give it to me, I don't know, there's something about it that's visceral, that it just meant to be, man.
So are you one of those people that feel the writing bug grabs you and says, raga, 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 get it out, and then you're done?
I have a friend who's a medium, and she totally believes these are stories being told to me through entities or whatever, and like, you know, I'm a skeptic, but also I'm like, yeah, I can buy that, because sometimes it feels like that.
The shit sometimes comes from the weirdest places, right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I've sometimes woken up after spending 10 minutes writing, it's like, what the hell did I just write?
Yeah, exactly. You know, when I was explaining that to some of my writing students last night, I was like, when you get in that mindset where it's like, oh, it's like the story wrote itself. It's not that. It's just that you know the character so well. You know that world so well that you almost don't even have to work for it. And they're just giving it to you. I mean, it's a rare occurrence, and sometimes, though, when you're writing that story, it's that sweet spot where you're separate from yourself, watching these characters go, yeah, giving it and doing it right.
Much like watching the movie and saying, yeah, it'd be like that, and then it's like, okay, and this, and then that, and then, I don't know about that part.
Also, no. I would like to just say that my husband just brought me zucchini and onions with sriracha and dipping sauce with rice, and he's the coolest ever.
Well, yay for him, but I disagree with his food choices.
What?
Not so much on the food that food eats. Sorry.
Meat!
And I sugar. And sugar.
But we're poor.
Huh?
We're poor and fat, and we need some veggies.
I haven't touched a veggie in ages.
Oh, no. I need my veggies. I like zucchini and onions, baby.
Well, onions I can live with.
I never would have thought I would, but he started making it for me. I'm seriously addicted to it. He just brought me a napkin.
Well, you gotta be tidy.
Just brought me... Mm. Oh, my God.
Gotta be tidy. Keep it clean.
Sweet.
Now, I've heard good things about fried zucchinis, but I'm still not touching them either.
Mm. No, I got addicted to them after, like, getting addicted to hibachi, man. Like, you go to hibachi and you get, like, the steak or the shrimp or the salmon that comes with zucchini and rice and all kinds of good stuff.
Okay.
Oh, it's the greatest.
All right. I'll leave you guys to that because I'm still not touching it.
Oh my gosh.
Cookies and steak. That's it for me.
Cookies and steak. Yeah, I do like that. What kind of? What are your favorite cookies?
Aha! One that you can't get down there.
Nuh-uh.
Uh-huh.
What is it?
It's called Fudgios. So you're familiar with Oreo? You're familiar with Oreos, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so think of Oreos, but with a fudge base as opposed to a vanilla or a chocolate base.
Oh, weird.
Made by the same company.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See, when I think of, like, non-Oreos, I think of Hydrox.
I don't even know what the hell that is.
Hydrox is the fake Oreo.
Oh, okay, because I think it's there's, like, so 40 different brands of that.
Like a medicine.
Ew. What the hell?
It's fake Oreos. That's on the East Coast. Hydra.
I will, however, say that I went to a convention once several years ago, and I told everybody, bring me cookies, and I will give you something.
Okay.
And I ended up walking away with about 10 pounds of cookies.
Okay.
I was like, yeah, I'll take cookies. Any kind of cookies, generally speaking. I was introduced as a result of that to, what the hell was it? Snickerdoodles, which I'd never had before.
Oh my god, Snickerdoodles are awesome. Yeah.
I now like those, but I never had them before because I'd never seen them up here.
Aren't they like a New England thing, I feel like?
I want to say you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like E.L. Fudge?
I love fudge.
No, like the E.L. Fudge cookies?
I am not familiar with them.
You never had E.L. Fudge?
No. You're going to have to remember that in America and in Canada, there's a bunch of brands that are different.
I know. But
see, you guys can't get Coffee Crisp chocolate bars?
We got to find the equivalent of E.L. Fudge for you, because they are like the most fattening, delicious cookies in the world. They're like butter cookies with like thick, fudgy chocolate between, and then you dip them in, oh my god, in milk.
Yeah, that's what I do with Fudgios.
Yeah.
Or better, just take a bite and then take a drink of milk. And it's like, okay,
good. We've gotten away from, like...
Okay, I think we've gotten away from the book story writing stuff. I do like the cover on this one book, Dark Bits.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I like it. It's cool.
That was one of the, I think, one of the first times I worked with Jacob Haddon and Apocrypha. Which he also runs Lamplight Magazine, and he was the one that published Homebirth, which was my last book to come out.
Cool.
Which is the kaiju.
I was going to say that one because I saw that one too, and it's like, kaiju.
It's fun. And that's that book is in the same universe as a motherfucking heist novel will be.
See, I was going to come to that one at some point. But I was going to first go to Tall Tales with Short Cocks because I like the anthology name.
Yeah. I've been in two of those. Yeah, those are fun. Those are so great. I always get kind of, I don't know. I feel like I don't quite belong in the Bizarro community yet, even though I write Bizarro stories. But, I mean, they're such good people. I love being in those books. I love that they're so welcoming.
Well, they're basically, what's your criteria for being a Bizarro writer?
I don't know.
Is it strange? Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so weird because everyone has different criteria for Bizarro, so...
Yeah.
I don't think it's enough to be just strange or weird. I think Bizarro has a certain heart to it. in its weirdness that a lot of just straight, like, weird fiction doesn't have. I think Bizarro has an intelligence and a commentary and heart that's kind of hidden within the weirdness.
Yep.
And I think that kind of gets lost in a lot of the people who are still out there being like, oh, Bizarro is dead, and whatever.
let's put that into real perspective. Nothing is ever dead, because let's look at zombies. I'm a big fan of zombies, and they are still reinventing the genre.
They're
every year, it seems something. It's like, wow, that's just cool. I didn't even think you could do that. Wow.
And that's great, because, I mean, personally, I've never been, like, it's weird, because I've always been interested in life after death, kind of reanimated dead people, but I never really thought of them as zombies. In a weird way. Like, I didn't start watching zombie stuff probably until high school, but I was already at that time writing stuff about dead people brought back to life. I don't know. I maybe I was reading too much. It was just like Egyptian mummy stuff. So I thought of them as like mummies instead of zombies. I don't know.
They technically are part of the same family, realistically, down when you get to the gristle. It's like, are you reanimated dead? Yeah. Are you reanimated dead? Yeah. Do you wear bandages? Yeah. Do you? No? Okay.
And I was so obsessed with what I believe is the first Zom rom-com, My Boyfriend's Back.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Early 90s. I would get it from the library all the time. Like, loved it. I would obsessively watch it. Well, first it was like probably one of the first experiences where I was like, I might be gay. When I was like looking at Missy McLeod like eating a lollipop. Like, I'm not, like, I'm straight, but still I think back on Missy McLeod and I'm like, maybe.
Yeah, for the right time, you can never go some.
If I was a reanimated corpse, fuck yeah.
Well, then I'm assuming you've enjoyed Warm Bodies.
I did like Warm Bodies. Yes. Yeah, I actually did watch that randomly, like, a couple years ago. I think I was homesick, and I was like, merp. I wasn't that, like, excited to see it, honestly. And I just put it on randomly, and yeah, I did like it.
Okay, well, I'm going to pause for a second. I'm going to pause for... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, not as much as My Boyfriend's Back. Not even close, because My Boyfriend's Back had Philip Seymour Hoffman in it.
Well, so. that's the way it works. First time's always the most important one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
but it paved the way.
My first horror movie is freaky for most people because they've never even heard of it, and sometimes.
Ooh.
Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things.
Ooh, I've never heard of that.
It's a Toronto movie. It's banned in a couple of places because there was a lot of, they killed a real sacrifice of a child, a baby, and that. It's like, yeah, no, not in 1970, nothing. They didn't do that crap here in Canada.
Didn't they just reveal that the Faces of Death stuff was not real?
That wouldn't surprise me, and I hadn't heard that.
I feel like I just read that, like, yesterday. And I was like, what? I don't know. I could be wrong about that. Sorry if I'm getting that wrong.
We'll call it.
I saw that.
We'll call it Fake Muse.
Yeah. I think my first, like, exposure to horror when I was a kid was Mr. Boogity.
Okay.
Honestly.
Okay.
Because Mr. Boogity scared the shit out of me.
I can't even remember that one.
It was like a made-for-TV something. I also remember watching the Friday the 13th TV show a lot.
Oh, yeah. That was a good show.
Yeah. Like, we have the DVDs, but I haven't watched them because, honestly, I'm kind of scared.
Well, I've got two movies to suggest for you if you have not seen them, and they're both zombie movies.
Mm?
The first one is called Maggie.
Mm.
Arnold Schwarzenegger as the dad.
Okay.
Playing a serious role.
Hmm.
And he's perfect. He's absolutely, it's not doing any of the one-line things. It's all, he's the dad, and his daughter has been bit, and she's turning. And, oh my God, it's a tearjerker movie.
Wow, really?
I hate tearjerker movies.
Mm?
But I enjoyed that
I like them because I have allergies.
Well, there you go.
It helps me cry out the...
You might enjoy that movie.
I would.
And then one that came out last year is called The Train to Busan.
I want to see that so bad.
It is freaking awesome, as long as you can read, stay with the subtitles.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
I watched Baskin because people were telling me about Baskin, and then they were like, the same people that were like, you'll like that movie, you'll love Train to Busan. Like, I really want to see that movie terribly.
It was worth the watch.
I'm just waiting for it to come on something I can watch it for.
I believe the Blu-ray is available at Walmart. Don't quote me, though.
Yeah, free!
Free! Oh, yeah, free. Free is always good. I think you have a year to wait for that one. Oh, have you watched Santa Clarita Diet?
Yes!
I love that show.
I tell you, that first episode, I seriously almost puked all over the place. I quit smoking, so, like, seriously, my senses are insane. Like, and I've just been, like, watching and smelling and tasting things that are just making me sick like crazy. Uh-huh. So, like, watching that show when I was, like, eating yogurt. It was awful. But that show is so good. Timothy Oliphant, or however you say his name,
yep,
is a gem. I have loved him ever since Go... Deadwood, all that shit. I love him. See, I love that show.
I wasn't that familiar with him, but it's like, okay, you're playing complete deadpan in this show. It's like, this is awesome. You know what?
He is an absolute genius because pretty much every role I've seen him in is different. He is great. That show is fantastic.
And the daughter.
Oh yeah, the daughter. Holy yeah, the crap. Daughter is good.
She now, nails that.
Yeah, and I'm totally into when I see a new interpretation of the genre. Like, I checked out A Walking Dead a little bit ago, like 2 seasons ago.
That's okay. We're okay with that. I still watch it religiously.
Yeah. I mean, I did like it. I never loved it, but I liked it. And honestly, I loved The Governor. Like, he was my toast and jam.
Did you ever read the comics?
I haven't read the comics, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I would love to.
The Governor, night and day differences.
Really?
In the comic books, way more a badass.
Okay, well that sounds like something I need to do.
He is that guy that you really want to hate, because he is that guy.
Yeah.
In the TV show, it's like...
That's my favorite kind of character.
Oh, yeah.
I love characters that you absolutely hate, but then there's something about them, this one tiny little golden thing that keeps you from hating them, and that's my jam.
Okay.
I love characters like that.
Well, that's why I'm now going to start talking about characterization in stories. How do you bring that to be?
You know, I do a lot of people watching. You know, I obviously read a lot. I watch a lot of stuff. When I come up with a character, I honestly start with a sentence, one line of dialogue, and pretty much just try to shut off my brain as far as editing and judgment goes. And I just like to figure out who characters are. I just kind of like to start a scene of dialogue and see how characters bounce off each other, how they react to different things. You know, sometimes I'll just throw them in a room where there's nothing going on and then just introduce something weird into the room, see how they react to that, see how they, you know, do they try to save each other, do they try to deceive each other. For me, it's very, I don't know, it just feels kind of instinctual once I get into the character mindset. I just follow where they go. And honestly, a lot of times I'm like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? Like, why did I go here? Why did this happen? The reason it happens is because it's in me. I think it's in all of us. I think that I tap into it a lot because I've trained myself to do so, much to probably the chagrin of my friends and family. I'm much too honest. writing has totally obliterated my filter. I follow a character wherever she or he wants to go, no matter how depraved, and then I have to deal with it after I set down the pen and have to be a real person. And so, I mean, that's the rub of it all. If you're into creating the characters, which I think you should, if you really want to write real characters, I think you should treat it like acting, honestly. Really get into the characters. It's hard to let it go. It's hard to turn it on and off, and it can be shitty at times.
I totally hear you. It's like about giving them depth, because without being depth, why would you care about them?
Yeah. And it's like they always say, no tears in the writer, no tears in the reader.
They say that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm probably reading the wrong book then.
Some do.
Okay.
I mean, there are times when I'm writing a character who's very angry, who's, you know, hates most people, and then it's hard to let it go. It's hard to just switch it off. I have to calm myself down and get out of it. It's, you know, I can't go online and start posting afterwards, because I've caught myself posting in like the guise of my characters, because I'm still like caught in the inferno of it. And I mean, that's a thing I need to, I think it's so easy these days as a writer to get caught up in the social media, and so much of the world these days, I think, feels fake, as far as reality is spinning away from us every
Great.
Day. Yeah,
you're leading me right into four different sets of questions. It's not, oh man, how am I going to remember this one to go back to it?
I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. So that being all what you've just said right there, do you find that there are any taboos, things that you don't want to ever touch in writing?
That's a hard thing to answer, just because looking back on things I wrote in the past, I feel like I should have thought more before I wrote them.
Right.
So, like, in retrospect, there are things that I wish I hadn't touched at that age. So, like, for instance, I wrote a fantasy world, and I grew up on the fantasy worlds of Tolkien, where there, I mean,
love
and
Tolkien.
Other fantasy world. Yeah, I mean, I love him too, but I grew up on fantasy worlds that were inherently kind of racist in the world building.
Okay.
And that, yeah. So, I mean, I kind of accidentally put that shit into like how I built my world, and I regret it, and I think it's dumb, and I would take it back if I could. So, I mean, now at this age, you know, me being 19 doing that, and me being 34 now doing this, like, it's hard for me to say that there are subjects I wouldn't touch or taboos I wouldn't break. Because if I do it now at fucking 54, I might be like, oh, fuck that bitch.
Well, you see, I do see the one book here called Virtuoso in Masturbation.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would never regret that. That's
oh, funny. Okay.
That's just a joke book, though. It's just jokes and illustrations and writing prompts.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I can just see the title and the cover there. It's like, I wonder what that's about.
Yeah, no, it's just a joke book, honestly, and it has writing prompts in it that are like kind of fun.
Awesome.
So, like, that's just that was the only book I self-published. It was my experiment in self-publishing, and it didn't go well.
Okay. Well, see, that's a
but
question.
I still love
three
the
more
book.
Down. So, In the same vein, you've just mentioned and wrapped into a whole, hey, I write some stuff and some people don't, they get weirded by it. How do you find when you're, like your friends and family you're talking to, do they all support you when you're writing and stuff? And how do you get to deal with, is that what you really think sometimes when you write this stuff?
I think at this point I started taking writing seriously when I was about 19, 20. And I mean, at that point, nobody else took me seriously. Relationships, you know, I had some friends who supported me. My parents did not support me at all. Then I started to kind of clean up my act a little bit. I went through some rough times in my early 20s. I ended up getting published when I was 25. Now, it was not a reputable publishing company.
Okay.
No
names then.
Yeah. However, it gave me a confidence that I didn't have before. It gave me a book in my hands, and it allowed me, through all of the ridiculousness around this publishing company, it allowed me to submit more stuff. And within a year, I had 3 more publishing contracts. So, from actual good companies. Now, I mean, they were fledgling companies. That's what I did when I started off. I would go on Duotrope, which is still what I use to find publishers. I looked for fledgling publishing companies because I figured they would be more willing to take a chance on someone like me. Because when I was first coming out with books, I had, my first book was Arthurian Legend. My second book was Dystopian. My third book was Steampunk. My fourth book was Horror. Like, there was, and they were all in a very close amount of time. So I was just looking for companies that would take a chance on me. And I did stumble and fall a couple of times. A lot of the books that I initially had published are no longer in print. But I eventually stumbled upon Postmortem Press, where I really, you know, I dug in my heels. They took a concerted interest in me. They supported me. And I feel like I've been successful ever since.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, from what you've mentioned here, your travail going from starting to becoming a regularly published author has been rather good for the most part. I mean, I've heard some people's like, I've been publishing, getting my stuff done for like many years. And it's like, I ripped my head out. It's like, then just step back for a minute and look at it again and do it again somewhere else. But
I mean, honestly, and I knew no one who was a writer or a publisher at that time. I was all on my own. I was doing this all on Google, basically researching how to write cover letters, researching publishers. At that time, Duotrope was free. So, I mean, I had access to that, but I was on Rallin and, you know, all those. I did this all on my own because I was passionate about it, because I had written all these books, and I like, at the time where I met Dave, who's now my husband, like, I had written all of these books and all these stories, and no one at that point had really encouraged me to get them published. And he's like, well, this is crazy. He's like, you know, you love writing, like, get published.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So. I was writing for 4 years, 5 years, without even thinking of trying to get published. So, because I was just trying to figure out who I was as a writer, and I was learning and growing. And in that time between getting published and now, I mean, I've grown way more than I did in that time. So it's a never ending evolution. And if you don't take charge of it, if it's something you're passionate about, you should want to seek out the answers and the way to achieve it on your own. I know it sounds silly because that's just what I did, but I mean, that just seems normal to me.
We're going to paraphrase all of this interview and put it as like a whole self-help. Be what you can do.
Yeah.
Be passionate. Throw it all in there and go and do it because you wanna.
Yeah, man. It's like, you know, follow the inspirato. Don't aim for a word count. Make your words count. Like, just do it.
Well, I'm going to know.
Am I the new Tony Robbins? I don't have banana hands. I can't do it.
I've actually read the Tony Robbins book.
He's amazing. I love him. I just love his face.
Not a huge fan of him, but
I just like his face. His face makes me happy.
He's tall.
That's enough to motivate me to be a better person, just looking at his face.
Oh, okay. Whatever works. I tend to go into some more esoteric artwork when I'm going to do that.
Again,
but
I'm looking at this crazy zombie face that's on the Skype right now for you.
Oh, yeah. What was his name? I know his name. I'm blanking. I'm feeling bad about his name.
Mr. No Nose Face.
Oh. I have to shout out.
Old Zero Eyes.
Well, yeah, that's actually just like there's about 1,000 layers of art into that, and he just zombified me. It's an awesome picture. I've loved it. I've loved it for many years.
He's been staring at me the whole time.
Oh, that's sorry.
No, it's okay.
That's why I have two screens here, so I have stuff I cover stuff with.
I used to not be able to watch horror things or talk about horror, like read horror things. I could write them, but not read or watch them. But then I got on Zoloft and it saved my life. Okay. Now I can do all the horror things. All
right. So, I mean, do we watch a lot of horror movies?
Now I do.
Okay.
Now I get really excited about watching them like I did when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I loved watching horror movies, even though I, like, you know, I watched them through, like, you know,
the fingers in front of the eyes.
But, like, I used to, like, starting really young, we had a thing in Maryland and I think around there. It was called Nightmare Theater, and it was a Saturday thing. It was like Saturday at 3 o'clock. There was a horror movie, and then there was a kung fu movie after it.
Kung fu! Hey, oh, hey, hey!
And like I'd always watch the horror movies, and sometimes the kung fu, but mostly the horror movies. And I have entries in my diary from like 1989 one that's like watching Serpent in the Rainbow.
Awesome movie. Kind of messed up, but an awesome movie.
Yeah, but it's like, I should not have been allowed to watch it.
Well, that's like me with Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things.
Yeah.
I saw that very young in age, and it's like, wow, maybe that's why I messed up sometimes with all this horror crap.
Did you ever watch People Under the Stairs?
Yes.
I can't watch it because there was a billboard in my town for it. We used to drive past it every day to my friend's house, like a big billboard for People Under the Stairs.
Nice.
And then people told me that the movie has something where does someone's mouth get sewn shut?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, fuck no. No, no. Oh,
so you might want to read up a little bit on Haitian zombies then.
Nope.
Because that's a big part of it.
Nope.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Sorry.
I won't go into it any farther.
No, I do love, because I hate that stuff the most, I kind of love it the most. But,
okay. All right. Foreign horror?
I know. I can't. It's so scary. Okay. I haven't experimented with a foreign horror since getting on the Zoloft, so I don't know.
I will make a recommendation.
Honestly, I've seen, I can't watch Serbian.
No, don't watch that.
But I've seen Necromantic.
I haven't watched that one yet. Any good?
Or I saw enough of Necromantic that I wanted to see.
Gotcha.
So well, that's about it. But I did, God, what was it? There was something about, like, a Spider Woman horror movie.
Quite a few movies like that.
But it was, like, one of the, like, the first horror movie from some country, and it was, like, about a spider. I don't remember. But it looked cool. Someone sent me a trailer. I'll have to find it.
Tokyo Gore Police is a good one.
Oh, yeah! Okay, no, I forgot about I Love Audition.
Okay, that's a good one.
House.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
One that
I didn't like House the first time I watched it because, like, the lady with the disembodied hands playing the piano scared the shit out of me.
Okay.
But then I watched it again and I was like, okay, this is fine.
What about The Exorcist 3?
I have not watched it. I've seen the second one. Well, I've seen the first and second one. I didn't like the first one.
I liked the first one. The second one was kind of mamby-pamby. The third one has some really great scenes. It's got the one little lady crawling along the ceiling. It's like, that's nice.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, no, I haven't seen that one. I didn't like The Exorcist for some reason. Poltergeist is not only one of my favorite, probably in the, it always goes between one and two favorite horror movie and favorite movie of all time.
Gotcha.
Like, it's definitely in the top five favorite movie of all time. But between horror movie, I always switch between Poltergeist and The Thing.
Oh, The Thing is awesome. But not to include the remake Poltergeist that came out.
No. None of the remakes. None of the remakes of either.
Okay. That's good.
I love The Thing.
The Thing is awesome.
So much. And that is a movie that should have terrified me like crazy. But I watched it for the first time at 10 in the morning with my husband.
With all the lights on.
All the lights on. It was like first thing in the morning for some reason. It didn't scare me, and it set that, like, in my brain that now The Thing is never scary in the way that it's going to hurt me.
Gotcha.
You know? I've watched, what is it? What's that stupid Lady in Black or... Woman in Black.
Woman in Black. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, yeah.
In the play where it's like the woman only actually attacks people with children, yet I would have nightmares about this woman. I'm like, I don't even have kids. Why are you bothering me, lady?
Well, okay. So in a similar vein, do you read any comic books?
I read the Buffy comics.
Buffy? Okay, Buffy's... Okay, yeah. But I like Buffy. I collect the Buffy comics, so that's
like
cool.
The comic, like the seasons that came out after the show ended.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is a comic book series called Nailbiter.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a little town somewhere in middle America, somewhere, I don't remember what it was, but it seems to be the highest concentration of serial killers come from this little town, and the main character has an obsession-ish thing that if you start chewing your fingernails, he gets all obsessed and has to kill you because your fingernails belong to him. It's such a cool concept.
Awesome.
That's sick.
I love that.
It's just one of those really weird little things like,
so cute.
Okay, this is kind of cool. I have to read this now.
Yeah, that is so cool.
Yeah, I know. I love shit like that. Cause, huh?
So, Nailbiter, you said?
Nailbiter, yeah. There's three trades out, I believe, right now.
That's so awesome. We have a great comic book shop in Frederick. It's so awesome. They have so many fun things. Although, like, I get so mad whenever they have a collectible I want. I really want a Tauntaun.
Yep.
I always say Taunton because of the rabbits in the garden.
Somebody's taunting you with a Tauntaun.
Yeah. I want the Tauntaun that I had as a kid with the rubber belly.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because that was my favorite. That was my favorite toy because I would just, like, every action figure or doll I had to be like, open the Tauntaun. Like, it was so cool. I loved it. It was so cute. It was so much better than all my little ponies.
Well, do you know what pop figures are?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, there's now a box Tauntaun set with the Tauntaun, and then I think the Luke and something else together as a box set.
Does it have a rubber belly?
No, it's all hard plastic, sorry.
Fuck it!
I'm just mentioning it because it's a cute little thing, and it's like, I sell it, so it's good. So, I think we got a little way there.
Yeah.
I think we're going to come right back over here and go into the... Oh, goodness, look at this question. Marketing. Because you've already said you understand and position yourself. It's like, I love this shit.
Yeah.
You're the best, being that person who is, I love this shit. You're the best person who can sell that shit.
Yeah, I mean, marketing is tough. I mean, I don't have any background in any, any of this.
Really, any of us authors do? No.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, some people do, obviously. But. I mean, especially publishers and whatnot. But, I mean, the thing is, I mean, I've just always been one of those people who's been an attention whore, to put it mildly. But right. I'm also actually very shy.
No.
Like when I meet people in person, I'm very shy. But then when I get to know you, like, I'm exactly like this. I'm loud and annoying. And it's, you know, there are people that really don't like me. I'm very abrasive to some people. And I get it. Like, I get it. I'm annoying. I talk a lot. It's ridiculous. I curse a lot. I don't hold anything back.
There are reports now that people who curse a lot are actually nicer, smarter people.
Well, you know, I'm fucking amazing.
Well, that's good.
I am the coolest cunt in the world, then.
There you go.
but, you know, for me, in this, the way that it seems to be marketing and social media now, people, you know, they just want to be friends with the people they admire. They want to know the background. I mean, that was the thing when DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff started to come out with, like, the behind the scenes and the commentaries. We ate that shit up because
still do.
I mean, we want to know all the things that that inspired those stories. We want to know what the people were thinking, and it's kind of amazing in social media that we're in on the ground floor of what the person is thinking while they're writing it, especially, you know, when you think of people posting stuff during NaNoWriMo. I mean, there were people that have, you know, I wrote Hairs in the Hedgerow, which I'm still editing, for NaNoWriMo 2015, and there were people following along. They're like, where the fuck is Hairs in the Hedgerow? It's 2017, bitch!
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm like, oh my god!
And I have a friend who, I don't know if you know what Drabble is.
Yes, of course.
And he released an entire huge-ass book in Drabble, every day, one bit at a time, at a time, at a time, at a time. It's like, holy crap, man, how do you have the patience to just do it little bits like that? I'd have to do, like, whole pages, whole chapters at a time.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to keep up with, one, what people want, two, what you are actually passionate about at the time without burning out on it. Which is a huge thing. I've seriously been on, like, the precipice of burnout for 2 years now. I'm at that point where people ask me about my writing, and my response is, and it's not, and, like, a friend of mine was like, are you bored? I'm like, no! Not bored at all. I'm just, there's so much, when you actually have the deadlines, It does steal a little bit of that fun from you. So you have to take the pleasure where you can and kind of the side projects, I think. And I think that's good also for marketing because, one, like your readers can see that you're not just a one-note person that's like, here's the book I'm releasing, here's the book I'm releasing, here's the book. And, you know, you do a lot of different things and you're involved in a lot of different things. Like, I post a lot about now politics because I have to.
Oh, geez. What could we possibly talk about in politics right now in America?
Like, on my author page, because honestly, like, the book I have coming out from Raw Dog Screaming Press.
Mm-hmm.
Is about a corrupt government being overthrown by a vigilante group.
Oh, no. I wonder where you got the inspiration for that from.
Oh, I wrote it when I was 20.
Oh, okay.
And then it was actually, I wrote it. It was actually already published. This is a reprint and a rewrite of a book I already had out. And it's relevant as fuck. And I was like, there's no way that this book is going to be relevant again. As I'm rewriting it for Raw Dog Screaming Press. And, Yeah.
One never knows, really. I mean, do
yeah,
we think...
Yeah, like, it starts off with people in a prison system working as slaves, basically, and it's... It's really sad.
Gotcha.
That this book, like, there's one library, like, in the entire world. Well, like, most of the people live underground. Like, it's, yeah, it's, I mean, it's a bummer that now this is kind of relevant again when I wrote it as a serious dystopian fantasy.
Well, think about it this way. Do we think George Orwell thought it would ever come true?
No, I mean, well, you know, he probably did, but I mean, not, I don't know. I don't fucking know. I'm not George Orwell. I'm just a weirdo who wrote down words.
Okay. Okay, let's stick with that then. Let's move on to a different concept altogether. How many conventions do you go to in a year? Go!
Oh my God, not enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I usually just go to, right now, Imaginarium. It's so expensive to go.
Yeah.
And right now I'm just, you know, working as a writer and a teacher and a tour guide. So I don't get to go to as many as I would like to. I really wanted to go to Scares That Care this year.
Nice.
But it's the first time in years that I'm getting to go to Martha's Vineyard. My mom is paying for our entire family to go. Martha's Vineyard is where Rabbits in the Garden, Hares in the Hedgerow is set. So I'm really excited. I'm going to do, like, streams from places in the book. And hopefully...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's actually really neat.
Yeah, because, like, my mom grew up on Martha's Vineyard. She's from there. I mean, we're not rich. Just to let people out there know. Like, she's from there, but there's really no family left on the island. But a lot of the younger kids in the family, like my nieces and nephews, haven't been to the island ever. Dave, my husband, has never been to the island. And it was... an integral part of our childhood growing up, basically. So, I mean, that's why I chose to set those novels there, because that was, Martha's Vineyard is in my heart. It was a place where, I mean, my grandparents, they were a huge influence on me. That island was a huge influence on me. And, since I, you know, after getting older and not being able to go there because it's expensive as fuck, like it, you know, it's weird. You know, you have that kind of blood tie to a place, and you can't go there. Like, it's always calling you, and you can't go because you can't afford it. And so that's kind of why I wrote the books in a way.
So that you could go back to it a few times.
Yeah, yeah. So I could, you know, eternally tie myself to that place. And I, you know, when I was initially researching Rabbits in the Garden, I talked to, you know, my aunts and uncles. You know, my mother is one of many children and that grew up in the 40s and 50s and 60s there. So I got to learn a lot from them, and I'm really looking forward to going back there, especially after writing the sequel and realizing that the connection to Martha's Vineyard in that universe goes way farther back than Rabbits in the Garden. So I'm really excited about it.
You'll build up new materials, like, oh crap, I forgot about this place, and oh geez, I can include this as, like, where the hell did that green thing come from?
I'm sure I'll get to the island and I won't be able to stream shit because my shitty phone won't work.
Well, that's why you just videotape it all and archive it and then post it, like, yeah, this is live. I was here. You should see this.
It's so funny because, like, my brother sent us some videos for Christmas last year, and they were all, you know, stuff that my dad had recorded. And it was all this weird B-roll from Martha's Vineyard. It's just like waves lapping the shore, people walking by.
Mellow shit. There's
no noise. It's just weird B-roll.
Mellow shit. You put that on the the making of is like, yeah, look, this is the place.
Yeah. That was my childhood. Just people walking by and waves lapping the shore.
Nice. Well, let's before we wrap up, let's just throw in the one other thing here, because I saw it in here a couple times, and it's like, that sounds fun. Darla Decker.
Darla Decker! Yay! I miss her so much. Okay, so Darla Decker is the Darla Decker Diaries is a series I have out from Evolve Publishing, and there are currently 4 books out. The 5th book is coming out soon, Darla Decker Breaks the Case. Oh my gosh, I miss her so much now that I'm not writing them anymore. I took a little break because the first 5 books cover all of middle school. And she'll be going into high school when I start again. And it's just a wonderful series that's very frank and just kind of talks about the very honest things about growing up as a girl and as a guy. There are definitely dudes in it. But it's like, you know, to give you a kind of glimpse of it, like the first book has the word finger bang in it. Like, I mean, it's, you know, she's 11 in the book. It's, I guess it's appropriate for 13 and up, but come on.
I ain't saying nothing.
Yeah.
I'll be frank. I was rather surprised when I heard the expression come up in a TV show last week. It's like, what?
Yeah. Nowadays it seems very normal. But, you know, when I was writing it, I was just like, eeps, whatever.
Okay.
But I mean, when I was growing up, you know, 11 was about the age I learned that word. I didn't see it in action, but that's when I learned what it means, you know, what it meant. So, like, it was kind of, I grew up with 2 older brothers, so I learned a lot of dirty things.
I know nothing. I hear nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know anything.
So I just wanted to give a voice to those girls, man. You know, girls are raunchy.
Can be.
Way raunchier than I think a lot of people give them credit for. Teenage girls are gross and awesome. Like, I am constantly surprised by the stuff, you know. I thought I did crazy stuff when I was a kid, but then when I teach kids in my writing class, like, girls, they are gross, man.
Uh-huh. I used to live across from a Catholic school, so I know.
Yeah.
It's like, what did you guys do? What? What? Explain that again? Okay. What? No, that's not right.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's so right.
So we're pretty much wrapping it up now. And if there was anything you wanted to actually just say out there and, like, be out there, what would it be?
I think I'd like to talk about the fact that, you know, for the second time this year, I'm doing a story a week, which I did in 2014, and now I'm doing again, and it's, you know, writing a short story every week, flash fiction, whatever. And a lot of people are doing it, and I just want to put it out there to anybody who really wants to be a writer, who really wants to try their hand at writing stories, and is just afraid that they're going to start writing and never finish something. Give yourself the A Story a Week challenge. Challenge yourself to write an entire story in a week. It doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to edit it. I still have stories from the 2014 challenge that I haven't typed up yet. And I'm 10 stories into this year. I'm writing all flash fiction, and it's all part of my first short story collection I'm writing called Webworm. Just do it, man. Like, there's no point in waiting. All the waiting is going to do is going to make you feel worse about the waiting.
No waiting.
Just do it.
No waiting. Just do it.
You know what? You might write a story and find that you're not great at it. That's okay. Because you may find that you're creative and want to, you know, you're artistic and want to create something, but writing ain't your thing. Do some painting. Sculpting, like, audition for a play. Like, there's something in you that makes you want to create art. You just have to figure out what it is. And don't feel discouraged if the thing you try isn't the thing that sticks. Because you're all amazing, and you're smart, and you're cool. And if you're driven to do it, you can do it, Chorchko.
Cool. As long as it's not an alien popping out of your chest, because that movie's coming up.
Well, you know what? That's just an expression of someone's self.
True. Okay. True that. True that.
And so, maybe that alien just wanted to, you know, put on a show.
And I saw that one. I've seen that video. So where is the best way for people to stalk you?
I'm at JessicaMcHughBooks.com. I'm also on Facebook very often at Facebook.com/author.JessicaMcHugh. You can find me on Twitter at TheJessMcHugh and on Instagram at TheJessMcHugh.
Awesome. Jessica, thanks again for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. It's been a hell of a fun time.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry if I got off topic, but, you know.
The show is more about enjoying the people who were here than it is about facts and figures.
I dig you.
Excellent. Everybody out there in After Raw Line, definitely check out Jessica's material. It's pant loads of fun from what I can see. Come back again every Wednesday, 9 p.m. Every Wednesday. Do it. TMVCafe.com. Have yourselves an After Rotten time and be good and all that other crap.
Thank you, everyone.
A big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day that teddy bears have their picnic.